Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is World Forms and Fighting Champion John Chung, and you're listening to the AMAA Legends and Pioneers Radio Blog Show with Professor Gary Lee and the Sport Karate Museum Archives, protecting the history, one warrior at a time. Enjoy.
This program is sponsored by the American Martial Arts Alliance Foundation and Elite Publications. Everyone has a story. You just have to get it out. Visit Elite Publications at www.elitepublications.org.
Well, Merry Christmas, everybody. Mahalo and aloha. How cool it is to have the man that introduces the show to be on the air tonight. And before I introduce him, and I'm very excited about this show tonight, I want to introduce my co-host. Now, one of my co-hosts, Mr. Dean Piles, he is dealing with a hospital issue, so he won't be on tonight. And we want to say all our best to Aubrey and hope she gets better. And we're with you, Dean, and we'll see you next week. And God bless you. Now, my other co-host that puts up with me every week, and he's a great guy. He is a guy that I don't use the word master or grandmaster very often, but I don't mind saying the word master in front of his name, because he is a master at Tang Soo Do Karate, a Korean form of martial arts. From Cleveland, Ohio, my co-host, Mr. A.J. Perry. A.J., you there, buddy?
How are you, Professor? Thank you for the nice introduction.
Well, I'm doing good. I'm excited about having my Korean friend on tonight, and I know you know him. You met him a long time ago. He's a great guy. So let me introduce him right now. This man, golly, Bo, how can I start? Well, I'll tell you how it started. Back in the early 70s, Sam Chapman took me to a tournament in Boone, North Carolina, and I got to compete against him, and I was lucky enough to take a third place. My dear friend Bobby Tucker took second, and I remember Sam Chapman coming up to me and saying, look, that young man, that man named John Chung, he's a future. And I said, okay, Sam. And you know what? He turned out to be the future. And guys, you know, the word excellence is the word I think of when I think of Mr. John Chung, who studied under the great, June Ree, rest in peace. So at this time, I'm very excited to introduce my dear friend, Mr. John Chung. John, you there, sir?
I am here, Mr. Gary Lee. Thank you for having me. Hello, everyone.
Well, John, we're excited about having you, sir. So let's start when you started with Master Ree. What year was that?
I started with the Grandmaster Jun Lee in Washington, D.C., 1970.
Now, what year did you make black belt, John?
I made black belt January of 1974.
Now, you know, the thing I think about, John, is the 80s, when it was really an interesting time. You were the most dominant competitor in traditional forms, and the other most dominant competitor in karate forms was our friend George Chung. Now, everybody thought you guys were related, but of course you're not. But, you know, tell me
no
what
relation,
happened,
no relation. No relation. You know,
I know.
George
but
is
tell me what happened,
younger
John,
than
when, tell me what happened when Karate Illustrated and all the tournament competitors realized you were the man to beat in traditional forms. What was your execution of training? All you did was train and under the guidance of Master Ree?
Well, at the time when I was competing, especially when I was competing nationally, I had already, in a way, kind of became a veteran competitor, competing a lot locally. And I started competing nationally in 1979. And at that time, I had just gone to Wake Forest University in 1980. So I was a late college student, but because I was a student, I had a lot of so-called leisure time, right? When you're in college, you basically go to classes. You have a lot of time to either study or not study or work out. And I happened to be at the right place at the right time where I was able to manage my time of school and training. So, yes, I did train, I mean, anywhere between, I guess, 2 to 4 hours a day. And same time, I was at Wake Forest as a student teacher, PE class, Taekwondo class, was a one-credit program with Wake Forest University's PE department. So
cool.
It was, if I was in class and if I wasn't training or if I wasn't teaching, I was on the road competing. And I think one of those years, and I can't remember, and I always make fun of it, I competed in 56 tournaments. 56 tournaments.
Wow.
Because locally, I would go support, compete Saturday, and I would also compete Sunday. So some weekends, you know, I would drive. I was at Winston-Salem, so I would drive, for example, you know, Jesse Bowen, he was in North Carolina also when they had a karate national tournament. I would go to that tournament one, and the next day I would turn around and go to another one, let's say in South Carolina or North Carolina. So there were a lot of tournaments in the Carolina areas as well as Virginia. So very, very busy, busy time when I was at Wake Forest.
Well, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but, you know, I think my memory's pretty sharp. I remember the invention of a 10 in forms. You showed that excellence. I mean, come on. I'm just talking like crazy Gary Lee, but honestly, you have perfection. I mean, your kicks, your attitude, your presence, it was a 10. And I say that very openly because, you know, not many people could really say they get a 10. But every time you competed, it seemed like you got better and better and better. And it just impressed so many people. What did you do to make that excellence like that? I mean, I know you trained, but did you have some guidance? Did Master Reed really look over you all the time?
No, I mean, you know, yes, we were all trained under Grandmaster Jun Lee's program, so we had a good basics. And I think that once you have that good, solid basics, it doesn't matter what style. Once you understand the basics, when you start veering off to even open, creative, or extreme, that solid basic is going to stick out in terms of speed, power, focus, stances. And, of course, continued training, that's, in a way, any athlete, right? Whether it doesn't matter if you're martial arts, you're going to train, as well as if you're competing, you're going to train more because you are competing. So it was myself just wanting to be better, but also same time, like I know you had mentioned George, but it was George, Ernie Reyes Jr., Cynthia Rothrock, Peter Morales, Karen Shepherd, you name some of the people that are out there competing, they were all, in a way, top of the class. So if you have those people as your competitor, you are going to continue to do better. But again, I always say, I'm not competing against them. I'm competing against myself. So,
well, you know, my dear friend Dale Kirby, we talked today, and you want me to make sure I told you hello. You know,
absolutely.
Dale Kirby was one of those guys back in the day with you being those great, great competitors. Now, I've got an email. I have an email from one of your fans from Switzerland, and he wanted me to ask you a direct question because he knew the robbery between you and George Chung in a good way. But it was a robbery, traditional against creative. And he wanted to ask you, basically, what was in your head when you competed against George? Because you know he was totally different from a John Chung. What was in your head, sir?
I think we both came up in an era where martial arts boom, sport karate, was booming in from, in a way, traditional to open or creative, a musical. At that time, there was no extreme So whatever we can do in terms of, like, George, you would try to do some aerials and things like that. I would stick to more martial arts moves, such as, like, double tornado kicks, jump kicks, flying kicks, multiple kicks. So I stuck more to the martial arts aspect and became more so-called creative, or took it to the next level, whereas George kind of took it more as, more, you can say, acrobatic area, more like a wushu type, if you want to call it. And he went that route. And I think as a martial artist, judges, as well as other martial artists or spectators, if you want to call it, they appreciated good kick, good punches. And, of course, being a Taekwondo stylist, having a good sidekick definitely helped. And that kind of became my trademark or patent. For my the sidekick that I was doing at the competition, so I was very lucky.
Oh, well, look at it, you're a phenomenal sidekick.
Go ahead, AJ.
Pardon?
No, you worked at it. You had a phenomenal sidekick.
Oh yes, I mean I don't know if I ever told the story, shared it. You know, when I was brown belt coming up a black belt, I would say that's probably about a year right before I was testing from a black belt. I was doing 100 side kicks a day each leg. I would stand in front of the mirror, 100 side kicks a day each leg I practiced. So it was
probably holding it out.
One leg, I make sure I did both legs.
That shows the attitude of a true champion. Now, I want to say something. You know, you're known as an amazing forms world champion competitor, but I can – because I know you were a great fighter too, John. You know, you didn't get credit for
fighting.
Your fighting. But...
Yes, I enjoy fighting.
Yes, you...
I love fighting. You know, in many tournaments, I did pretty well. In fact, when I went to one of the tournaments that I went down to Virginia Beach, Chuck Norris was hosting, and that's when I met Chuck Norris for the first time in 1978. I won both form and fighting, and Chuck Norris was like, "Wow, that's pretty cool." I said, yeah, I mean,
That is pretty cool.
Everybody came up, you know, in Jumi system. You didn't just do forms. We all fought, and everybody had to fight.
Exactly.
And so,
it would be a great interview unless I said hello to your lovely sister Helen, and she was
right.
A great competitor too. You know,
right?
She was
same
a,
thing.
Yeah,
my
she went to one. She did. She win a Waco championship.
She won the world title in Waco in fighting as well. So we all fought as well as we all did form. But, you know, when we compete, many times we try to stick with something that we, in a way, like you said, were more dominant at it. And I was very lucky enough to be dominant in forms. So I didn't want to jeopardize myself getting hurt or injured during fighting. I did enjoy fighting. I fought Battle of Leather many times and many of the local tournaments, when so-called the national title was not at stake, I would fight and I would do very well. And I was also able to win Waco world title. And to this day, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but to this day, I think I'm the only man in Waco who has both world title in form and fighting.
Yes. Well, I tell you what, I'll research that, but I'm sure it's true. But listen to me, John. You know, let me share this with you. I believe that in my heart, I really believe that the sport karate was destined to be, you know, like a household name, not just in the movies, not just in the commercials, but because of people like you. And, you know, the excellence, there's that word again. The word excellence comes to mind when I think about the word John Chung. Now, I got to ask you about another buddy of mine. Was Charlie Lee under you or was he under Master Ree?
Well, we were all under Master Ree. He was the head instructor. And then Lee had a few other instructors. But after he got his black belt, when I was traveling and when I was doing the circuit, Charlie Lee came under my tutelage and I started training him. And compete, and I would take him to local and national tournaments, and he competed. So, yes, I am his instructor, and he is him and I both, my sister, all are under Grandmaster Junior's system.
Now, John, I got to tell you a funny story. It won't take but a minute, but it's a funny story. I'm at Super Grand's in Hollywood, and I'm the master of ceremonies with Scott Hogarth. And there's a man at the security, and he wouldn't let nobody in. And he calls me on the microphone. He goes, "Gary, there's a little Oriental man here, and he wants to speak to you, but you know, I can't let him in." I said, "Well, who is he?" And he goes, "I don't know who he is." So I got up, and I went to the back, and it was Master Ree. He surprised everybody by showing up in Hollywood. So I looked at the guy, and I said, "Sir," the security guy, I said, "This is Master Jun Ree, the father of Taekwondo, and no one expected him to be here tonight, so please let him in." And he looked at me, and he said, no, Voice won't let nobody in. He can't come in." And he grabbed my shoulder. And I used to wear these hakamas and these kimonos. And he grabbed my shoulder, and John, I dropped him. I swept him to the ground and grabbed Master Ree by the arm and started walking down the hallway. And I go, "Master Ree, Voice Lydell is going to kill me." And Master Ree looked at me, and he goes, "Gary, don't worry. Just give me the microphone." And I walked him up to the stage, gave him the microphone. He did 100 push-ups in a minute. He did his sidekick with a glass of water on his head. And he turned around and looked at me and called me a samurai. I'll never forget that. God bless Master Ree. What a great guy.
Gary.
Yeah.
You ever call an Asian person an Oriental? They're Asian. Oriental's a rug, man. It's a rug.
See, now I have to disagree with you on that, because when I came to America, we used the word Oriental. And then somewhere down the line, I don't know, I guess America tried to be politically correct and changed Oriental to Asian. So
Oriental. The security guard called him an Oriental.
I was busting Gary's chops.
No, I mean, that's
cool.
That's,
but you know,
true.
That's one of the stories about Master Ree. One more. When I opened the museum, the first box of stuff I got was from Master Ree. He sent me his uniform. He sent me a belt. Sent me a tree. Sent me autographed books. And what the prize possession was, you remember that famous picture of him and Bruce Lee in Hawaii on the rock?
Yes.
Well, he sent me a picture with a signature of Bruce Lee, also him signing it. So I have it in the museum. That picture was sent to me by Master Ree. God bless him.
That is fantastic.
Well, it is fantastic. Yeah. Now, listen, buddy, don't go nowhere. We're going to bring you back in a few minutes. And we're going to play the Legends name game. This is where I'll say a name to you, and you get to talk about them, and we'll close the show out like that. Okay, John?
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking to world's form champion, world champion, Mr. John Chung, the amazing John Chung. And we'll bring you back in just a few minutes. But, what I'm excited about is that I get to be on the radio every week. And one of the people that puts me on, well, the man that puts me on the air, he's our special guest tonight on the 4+1. And I want to talk about it in just a minute. He runs Elite Publications. He's the president of the AMAA Radio. And he put out, a dozen books or more. But one of the books was my book, the museum book. And he did a great job on that. But he's an amazing man, an amazing producer. An amazing competitor. I'm talking about Honky Jesse Bowen. Jesse, there, buddy?
I am, sir. How are you doing?
What a great interview with our friend John Chung. Isn't it cool?
He is the man, a person that I have a lot of respect for, and he's one of the he's on our board, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for him.
Well, welcome to being a special guest and taking Professor Tom Spellman's place tonight. So I'm going to ask you the question. The question is, when does maturity set in after you make black belt? I mean, you have to have maturity for teaching and self-defense and performing in front of the public. But you tell me your attitude toward maturity when it sets in after black belt.
Well, as you're coming up the ranks, and if you get it in the beginning, when I say you get it, if you understand, you know, what a martial artist is, you've got a great teacher, you're modeling, then maturity after each belt rank. So if I'm a white belt today and I get promoted to my yellow belt or gold belt, then I should be a different person that day. It's the same thing about black belt. When you now move up to black belt, and you, if you have worked hard and you have trained and you have applied your blood, your sweat, and tears, and you get it, you know, you've done the leadership skill training and you are a black belt. When you make black belt, there is a change. You know, 10th degree black belt. I remember making 10th degree black belt, and it was advanced to 10th degree black belt. I woke up the next morning, there was a change. And that change was that, you know, that I've reached the top of this giant hill that I've dreamed about, thought about it, wanted to be there, and now I've arrived. And I'm young. I'm not old and, you know, falling down and have to have people helping me around, you know, and that's when you have to reinvent yourself. So that's how it is making black belt. A black belt has to reinvent themselves. They have to let go of the brown belt. And what has to happen for to have a great black belt, you have to have great leadership. And, you know, just like with Grandmaster John Chung, you know, he had great leadership in Grandmaster Joan Ree, people that held him accountable. So in this maturity, how do you know how to mature? You see, if you don't have great black belts in your corner showing you the way. I was fortunate with my teacher, Jan Wellendorf and Dale Brooks. I had great mentors that held me accountable, and I didn't make steps without them giving me the approval and the okay, because, number one, you know, as a black belt, if I went out there and opened up my own school, and I would have failed. But, see, they didn't do that. You know, when I made black belt, and, you know, because I'd been through all the leadership training, you know, Grandmaster Wellendorf was one of the first people to offer a degree program in martial arts. So I had a bachelor's degree in martial arts before I opened up my school. But it was that maturity of the classes and things I've done. So becoming a black belt, first degree black belt, there's a difference. You know, okay, I'm here. I have achieved it. Now if you make second degree black belt, you know, you're in this another place. But now by the time you get the fifth degree black belt, you should be a person of stature, and you should have not only a skill set, but you should have a very unique ability. And that's what, you know, Sensei used to test, that you had to do a fantastic feat in order to go to sixth degree black belt. You know, it wasn't the same. You have now crossed a line. And you have to demonstrate that you have matured to that place physically, mentally, emotionally. You are ready to take on that responsibility.
Well, wise words from a wise man. Well, listen, Hockey Bowen, Merry Christmas to you and your family and to Gwen and your daughter and everybody that you deal with. And I wish you a very, very Merry Christmas. I can't believe it's been 10 years, sir. And we're going to end it with Alan Goldberg next week. So, you know, you just have a great Christmas. I mean that from the heart, sir.
All right. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you.
You're welcome. Now I'd like to go to a lovely lady. Now, this is the lady of our group. The 4+1 is a group of men and women that I put together, as you heard from Auntie Jesse Bowen, that was our topic of tonight about maturity. So I want to bring on the lady of our group. She's a PKL champion. She trained in Shaolin Karate, hung out with people like Peter Urban and other great martial artists. She also now trains in Kung Fu, and she trains in Kung Fu daily. She's an amazing woman. Her name is Karen Slasher. Karen, you there, honey?
Yes, sir, I am. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. Is it snowing in North Carolina? Or are you on the coast, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm on the coast. It's about 60 outside.
Well, you know, Christmas is upon us, and, you know, it's interesting how we made it through another year, but you know what? Maturity, when I thought about this question tonight, I thought about you, Karen, because I thought about the fact that you had to go against the grain. One, because you're a beautiful woman. Two, you're a woman. Three, you know, you did martial arts in a group of majority of men. Most of the people that competed, you competed against, were men. So maturity had to set in. But I'm just interested in what you have to say. What different levels of maturity did you have to be who you were, who you are?
I had to be patient, and I had to follow a lot of the rules of the Kodokan judo, which was very much regulated in time spent. You couldn't go for more than one rank at a time, and so I had to be patient, and I had to. It was very clear to me that if I got this, I was on my own. You know, that nobody else could do this for me, and that to me was sobering. And like, if I pass or fail, if I win or lose, it's on me.
Yeah.
Nobody else could do it, and that was one of the things that I loved about it. I wasn't depending on a team or anyone screwing up on my team. But I used to love judging the brown belt divisions, especially the young boys about 17 up to about 30 who were brown belts. They were starving to get there. You know, they were so hungry for that belt. And I would watch them realize that they were on their own and that, you know, their friends, some of them didn't make it that far, but they knew how to train for it. And then they would get their black belt, and you would see they would change. As Hansi Bowen was saying, you change. And you realize this is all of that work paid off, and you see that achievement that you did it. And then you realize that you just got started. And very humbling when you say, here I go again, and you start the whole thing. That's another form of maturity.
You know, Karen?
Yeah.
You know, you were talking about, you know, being a Kodokan and that, you know, to your chagrin, you know, you had some, you know, high-ranking women to look up to, because there were some very high-ranking women in judo in the Kodokan at that time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And they weren't recognized very much. But, yeah, there are a lot of good people out there.
Karen, have you heard of Fukada? How do you pronounce it? I think it's Caro Fukada. She was the highest-ranking lady judo.
Yes, I met her partner in Houston.
Do you realize I have her red belt, her certificate,
yeah,
and her uniform?
I was there.
In the museum. Yes.
Yes,
and,
I was there
know,
that
I
year.
Was
it was amazing.
I received that from her courier. And, I mean, she must have been really awesome to train under, you know, Jigoro Kano, I believe, the founder of judo.
Jigoro Kano, yeah.
Yes, ma'am. But to be the only high-ranking 10th-degree black belt in judo being a woman, how cool is that?
Yeah, how cool. They wouldn't hang her picture in the Kodokan because she was a woman. If you remember.
No, that's not cool. But she hangs,
yeah,
you know, she hangs at the museum, and
I'm
honored to have her red belt, her certificate, and her uniform. I treasure it. I really treasure it. Yeah, I do. Now, Karen,
absolutely.
God bless you, and Merry Christmas to you. I wish you
a
very happy season end, and we'll be next week. We'll be talking to Mr. Alan Goldberg. So God bless you.
Yay,
we'll talk to you soon.
Okay. All right, bye.
Now, did Uncle Jerry get on? I didn't get to do a roll call for him. Jerry Smith? Jerry, are you on yet? Okay.
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. Let me introduce you, sir.
Hey, Jerry.
Ladies and gentlemen, this next man, I'm going to bounce to Las Vegas. This next man is a hero of mine and to the world. He is the founder of the Black Karate Federation. He is also the president of the Black Karate Federation. A Marine. You know, he used to work at Black Belt Magazine back in the day when Chuck Norris and Joe Louis and Bruce Lee would walk the hallways. Now, what's really cool about him is they did all that stuff, but people don't realize he was a badass fighter. I mean, the Tracy brothers sent him to Virginia, and they gave him his own school. That was amazing. But he used to beat up Benny Aquinas, Al Dacascos, all kinds of cool people. People don't realize that he was a great fighter. But you know what's really cool? What's really cool about him to me? He was the personal bodyguard of the Beatles, Ringo Starr, and hung out with Quincy Jones and all kinds of cool people. But I'm talking about I call him my uncle, Uncle Jerry Smith. Are you there, sir?
Yes, sir. I'm here. Thanks a lot for that.
Thank you for your phone working up. Your phone's not missing happy. You're on the line. That's cool. Now, the question is very simple. When did maturity set in when you made Black Belt? Or what level of maturity set in after you made Black Belt, Uncle Jerry?
Well, let me put it this way. When you're studying and the belt rings come, but whether you're in farms or cottages or whether you are a fighter, I was always interested in fighting. I loved it. That's what I breathed. Now, in a lot of instances, if a person wants to become good at fighting, he may come from a school where there's not much fighting. That means that he'll have to go on the circuit, go to other schools, train with other people who do, and he'll get better. But it's going to take a longer time when you do it that way. I was lucky enough to have a mentor, and most of you know who that was, but the world's champion, Joe Louis. And what he taught me, talking about maturity, what he taught me, I remember going up to Laurel Canyon at Nathaniel Brandon's house to work to train with him privately. And I wanted to show him, we both trained on Okinawa, how beautiful my forms were and how my knee was out over my toes and I was just perfect. And people will always ask me, they'll go, Jerry, what was the first thing that Joe taught you? And I said, you want to know the truth? I go, yeah. I said, I got in a stance. He looked at my little skinny body. Well, that was a lot smaller then. And he said, he almost kind of like canceled the lights. He said, come. First of all, he said, come inside. Went inside, he made me a protein drink. He goes, you know what? You have to, Jerry, if you want to become a champion, you're going to have to look at martial arts. You're going to have to, if you want to fight and become a champion fighter, you're going to have to look at it holistically. It has to be broken down into physical, mental, technical, academic, and psychological, all those things. You can't compete in tournaments eating tacos and burritos and not training and going. It's just not going to work. So he taught me this way. And the funny thing about it, when I came back from Vietnam, I had never fought anybody tournament before. And after training with Joe, within a year, of course I had my own school and I could train constantly every day. Within a year, I was rated regionally by Black Belt Magazine as within the top five, and on the West Coast, of course. But just having that tutelage there are guys who, you know what, there are guys who will become great fighters, but it's just going to take a longer time because they have to go and train with great fighters. I had it all handed to me on a platter, and boy, did I take it. And I hope that answered your question.
It did. You know, the one thing I want to tell my listeners is that if they've never listened to us before, what a great, not only a great fighter you were, but what a great trainer you were. You had Jim Ekelmus, who fought for the world championship against Bill Wallace in the 80s, I believe it was, in Las Vegas. And to have a great trainer, to have a fighter to represent a world championship, how cool was that?
Well, what was interesting about that is, and Joe used to laugh about it, what was interesting about that is, I also wanted my fighters, John Towns, beat Bill Wallace when he was undefeated in point karate. And the whole West Coast was talking about it because, you know, Bill never lost. And the Colas fight, the Jimmy Colas, that was a fight out from the North, South, East, and West. And whoever won those tournaments went against against Bill Wallace for the middleweight championship of the world. And that was about 30 years ago. And at that time, that was the big fight in Las Vegas. That was the UFC. It wasn't UFC, but it was the big fight. And it was also televised on CBS Sports.
Well, a great trainer, a great fighter, a great instructor. But you know what? I'll tell you something that's really cool. Mako, my old sword instructor, one of the maturity factors he would tell me, he says, Gary, if you're going to perform in public, you got to make sure that you remember that there's always somebody out there in the audience that knows what they're doing. And they're watching you. So you better not mess up. And my maturity factor as far as doing open demonstrations in front of the public really jumped up to a level. But, you know, different levels of maturity. You know, we're lucky to have great people like you, Uncle Jerry Smith, to teach us about maturity. And I want to thank you and wish you a very, very Merry Christmas. I mean that from the heart.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Now let's bounce from Las Vegas to Texas. Where's DE? Are you there, buddy?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let me introduce you. This young man, ladies and gentlemen, I've known since he was a orange belt many years ago. In fact, I got to coach him to his first world championship in underbelt as an orange belt at the Super Grand FKI Championships. And I think it was SKI or SKA, I forget. But anyway, he was under the great man, Mr. Fred Simon, the first black man to make black belt under the master June Ree. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, the very first black man to do that. Now, D.E. Chambers is an amazing man. He runs a school. You know, he teaches every day. But what's really cool about D.E., he's won the MVP of Texas over 5 times. One of these days, he'll tell me how many times exactly. But, you know, what's really gets me is that I'm proud of him, but, you know, it took me 17 years to win one Golden Greek, and he's won over 5. So, ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor to introduce my dear friend, Mr. David Chambers, the president of the Amateur Organization of Karate, the largest sport karate association in Texas. DE, we call that for short. DE, you there, buddy?
I am always here, but I am here.
Well, my introduction is getting better, trust me.
See that. I feel that one. I would get excited for a moment.
You should be excited because this is a Taekwondo-type show or a Korean-type show. We got AJ and John Chung and Hachi Bowen and a lot of Taekwondo guys on, and you're a Taekwondo guy. But I'm interested to hear your opinion. What, when and where maturity sets in after you make black belt? Because you got quite a few black belts, and I've sat on your black belt test. So your tests are hard, but I'm interested on your level, buddy. When does maturity set in?
Well, I was blessed and am blessed to have had a great instructor, and he contributed almost everything to my maturity in that level. And I want to actually make a major announcement. I just got approval from the board of the Amateur Organization of Karate, the AOK, and they are going to allow Grandmaster Fred A. Simon to continue. So they will continue that tournament for life. And it has now became a benefit event, And the funds raised from that event on January the 28th every year will go to educating other kids. And they go to scholarships and sponsorships. So I'm really excited about that. They're going to be doing that January the 28th every year. So
I'm excited about that for you, too, because that was one of the first tournaments I won back in the 70s. And
wow.
I mean, the early 80s. And, yeah, I remember you used to have it the Red Roof Inn before it burned down, remember?
Yeah,
and,
that's true.
And he'd always have finals. He'd always have finals. And I got to tell you a funny story, D. I just got in a fight with Fernando Robles, and he kicked me in the groin twice and beat me. And I walk outside the door, and there's Greek, the Golden Greek, Demetrius Savannah, on the table, and he can't touch the floor with his feet. He's kicking his feet back and forth, and he looks at me. I'll never forget it. He looks at me and says, "Are you that Gary Lee that people are talking about?" I said, "Yes, I'm Gary." He says, "Welcome to Texas. You need to guard your groin."
I'm sitting right here on the side of me now with a couple of Greek Award winners right now, but they don't know nothing about groin kicking, though, sir. That was before their time. I got the Zarate family with me. We're sitting here chatting now, and some of the things we were talking about was the maturity. We were talking about how to become mature because they just recently tested for their Taekwondo black belt, and they testing this Saturday for their first dan, along with, you know, my son testing, a few other testers to get to that level. Now, I believe we were talking about today that you first become a martial artist. Once you become a martial artist, that's a big thing. You know, you train and you learn, and that's a great thing. You become a black belt. At that point, I think you become a professional. When you become a black belt, I think you are, you're a professional at that point. Then once you become a professional, then around second dan, I think you should become an expert, meaning you should be good at your craft, but you're good at your craft because you know when to use your craft or not. You know how the mental aspect of how to use it, of how to avoid things, how to see things coming beforehand, that's a different level. I believe that level comes around second dan. It can come anywhere. You know, it can come anywhere. But I think second dan is that level, because we come from second dan is when you are able to own your own school. That's what we was always taught. Now, that comes from training, becoming a martial artist, afterwards, becoming an actual expert at a professional at what you're doing, then after becoming a professional, becoming an expert, and then at that point, you can teach others. Now, when you begin to teach others, that brings about a maturity, because certain things I probably just wouldn't do because I got people watching me, people trying to become, to emulate what I'm doing. So that brings about that need to say, hey, I got to be better than normal because people want to walk behind you. So I believe the second dan, if I had to put a number on it, that's where I would place it.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, one of the things I gotta say it. Marco was, you know, he was an amazing man. Besides teaching me sword, he would teach me about life. And he said, Gary, because you're a karate instructor, you're under a microscope. The parents are watching you. The kids are watching you. All the students are watching you. The public is watching you. The rent owner is watching you.
Yeah.
Everybody's watching you to mess up. So you gotta get that maturity kicked in really quick, buddy. So
when you become that instructor, you got more eyes on you, and I feel like at that point you have to have maturity. So that's why you have time frame. That's when it should come on you.
Well, listen, buddy, on behalf of the Sport Karate Museum and all the history journals, but you're one of them, we want to wish you and your family a very merry, merry Christmas and happy holidays. And I hope to see you real soon, buddy. I mean that from the heart.
I ask you one thing, Professor. I'm going to ask everybody for donations, even if they're going to be doing it online on the 28th. And you can go into Event Reg if you wish to donate, because we want to send several kids to college and help them financially. So on eventreg.org, they're going to have where you can actually donate for the Fred Simon Benefit event. So I'm going to ask everybody to help me out with that.
we're gonna talk, D, because I think I'm gonna offer you a position to bring in some vendors so we can raise some money for that scholarship fund. So we're gonna make that happen. Yeah, we're gonna make that happen, buddy. I'll call you about it and we'll talk about it. We'll make it happen. But anyway, seriously, Merry Christmas, my friend, and I'll talk to you real soon. Okay.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay, now, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to bounce from Texas back to Las Vegas. Now, the 4 Plus 1 is an amazing group of men and women from across the country. And the Plus 1 is an amazing man. He's one of my writers for the Sport Crime Museum webpage. He is a financial advisor for the Sport Crime Museum, helping me make decisions. He is my friend. In fact, he's more than my friend. I call him Uncle Jim. I'm talking about Mr. James E. Moore. James, you there, sir?
Yes, I am, sir.
Well, how are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing really well. How are you, sir?
How you doing, James?
Oh, good, AJ.
Well, you've been a puppy sitter for the past week. I know you've been taking care of a puppy. How's that going?
It's going great. Our daughter got back into town, and the puppy belongs to our daughter, and she had to go over to L.A. for about 10 days, and she's back now, so I'm not having as much duty as I did there for a while, but it was good. It was all good.
Well, you're the plus one. You're the part of the 4+1 of the 5 individuals I get together to talk about topics. So, Uncle Jim, when does maturity set in after black belt? When and where, and how do you feel about that?
Well, many people I talk with who have just earned their black belt, their first Don black belt, often say, now that I have this black belt, I really want to get good. And I think that they realize that obtaining a black belt is really the foundation from which you grow, not only in the arts, but in life. And, the more you know, the more you realize you have to learn. And that knowledge that you have to learn really is expansive. It just is geometric. Once you have the black belt, many people are going to view you as a tough person, a badass, if you will. But I think many black belts, when they first get the black belt, question what is next. And for me, it really broke down into two parts. One was the mental, or probably more specifically the spiritual. And the virtues of Bushido, when I got my black belt, the virtues of Bushido were really prominent in my mind. But at that time, I had no idea. I didn't even know Bushido existed. I just knew that these virtues were there. And when I finally learned Bushido, I saw it all summarized in one place. So the spiritual was certainly very important for me. The other was the physical. And one of the advice that I give, especially the younger martial artists that are coming up that still have young bodies, is to be sure you focus on the physical. Focus on physical strength, flexibility, endurance, all those things that you only have so much time early in your life to get those skills at the peak, at the pinnacle. And the higher you get that peak or that pinnacle, the more it's going to benefit you throughout your life, because as you get older, you start to lose some of that. So I advise them, don't forget the physical. It may be too obvious when you're young, but just keep focusing on that, because it will benefit you throughout your whole life. And I would just say, lastly, once you get a black belt, you should understand that you're now a role model. You're a role model for those coming up the ranks, and that's something you have to take very, very seriously.
Yes, sir. One of the things that was part of my maturity level was wanting to become a businessman, because most people think you open a karate school, you're automatically involved with business, but I had to learn business from the ground up, from the trenches, and thank goodness I had great instructors But maturity level for me to become a businessman, that was part of the levels I had to learn too, besides being a good instructor and being under the microscope. And, you know, the neat thing about it is, Uncle Jim, is that, you know, all the maturity levels that we have, becoming a karate instructor or a karate champion, we all had different levels, but we all had the same goal, to be the best we could be in teaching and competition. And, you know, I'm very excited about you know, this year we're honoring the ladies on October 6th and 7th in Houston. And last year you came to the event. I think it was the first time you ever came. Did you have a good time?
Oh, it was amazing. It was just three power pack days. There was so much going on and so many terrific people that were there. Many who I regret. It's just, there's so many people I didn't have a chance to meet, but it's fantastic. And I think this next year, it's going to even exceed the prior year. So,
well, I'm putting a little pressure. I'm going to say, I'm going to say, I already talked to Tom. I'll talk to you, and I'll talk to Uncle Jerry. Friday night, you know, Saturday night, we're already Karen, Edith, Herman, and all the girls. But Friday night, I think I would like to honor Uncle Jerry Smith and what he's done with the Black Karate Federation. But, you know, we'll see what happens. So I want people to, you know, maybe consider that, and of course Uncle Jerry to consider it. And to having Tom there and you there and try to get Casey and Sammy and some other guys from the BKF, I think it'd be pretty cool. So anyway, I wanted to kind of put that in the back of people's heads. But I want to say, Merry Christmas, Uncle Jim. I wish you the best to you and Stacy and your kids and everybody. And from the Sport Karate Museum, we wish you a Merry Christmas, sir.
Thank you, and to you as well. Thank you very much.
You bet. Now, I tell you what, you know what's really cool is that, you know, I get to talk to people around the country every week through this radio show. And one of the people that we've had on the air for almost a year now, he is on his way back to Philadelphia. We just had a grand, well, I don't know if he's got the grandkids yet or not, but he comes from California. We're talking about the inventor of SetVR.app. Now, if you don't know what SetVR.app is, that stands for Self-Defense Enhanced Training in Virtual Reality. Now, if you don't know what virtual reality is, that is where you wear a headset. And you're inside the program. You're not looking at it like on a screen. You're inside the program. You're immersed inside the program, no matter what that program is. And SetVR has built a hologram that kicks your butt. And what's really cool about it is, once you beat the hologram, a wisdom warrior will appear, and he will take you to a gate, and the gate will open up. And there will be the History General Portal. This is where you'll learn about the history of individuals, all the history generals. Now, we have a core group. We'll start. And the first person is Judge Roy Kerbin. You'll learn about his history and how he brought the two-point kick to America Public Karate, which is now around the world. This is George Minshew, the first person to give away a gold ring in open competition. Chris Minshew, NBO world champion, and my dear friend, Mr. Mike Dillard, who is the owner of Black Belt Magazine and Century Martial Arts. Their bios will be there as the core group for the History General Portal. Now, SetVR is really cool, guys. You not only have a village that you have to go through, not only the hologram that you have to beat up and the history of portals you learn about. It's progressive. It's fun. It's a heck of a workout. You can ask AJ about that. AJ, you there, buddy?
Oh, yeah.
How are you, Jerry? Give me your 2 cents about SetVR, buddy.
Well, it's not only a great training. It's not only a great training aid, but for the younger students, they have a ball with it. And, you know, if you think about it, you know, a lot of the younger kids nowadays, I see walking into the school, they have these legs that look like spindles, like little curtain rods, because they don't do anything, and their parents drive them around everywhere. And the biggest muscle on their body that's developed is their thumbs from playing video games. Well, this gives them a great opportunity after they start training in some martial arts to work their body at home and to interact and to train and react. And it's a great training aid, and they love it because it's like a video game, but they're using their whole body instead of just their thumbs. And it helps them react and interact.
Well, you heard it from the one and only Master A.J. Perry. So check it out. Go to Google. Google, that's right. And type in SETVR.APP. And you can see what everybody's excited about. Now, they'll be in Houston, Texas at the Vendor Show for the ladies event October 6th and 7th. So you can actually try on that set. Or, you know what? Last year, I think they sold 15 million headsets. So ladies and gentlemen, don't forget, setvr.app. Now, as I said earlier, Aubrey, Dean Piles' wife, is dealing with a hospital issue, and Dean's not on the air tonight. So we're not going to do 3 minutes with the Wolverine. We're going to go straight to my special guest, John Chung. John, you there, buddy?
Yes, I am. Boy, you're speaking
okay.
To all the
we're going to play the Legends Name Game. This was invented by Bob White, my Kimpo buddy in California. This is where we say a name, and you got 1 minute to talk about them, whether you know them or not. I'm with you with as many names as I can. You ready?
All right, I'll do my best.
Okay, Jeff Smith.
Jeff Smith is my big brother. He was my coach. When I started, he was a head instructor in Kensington, Maryland. I actually had to fight some of his students, which pushed me to the next level as a underbelt. Jeff Smith, known as the DC Bomber, because when he hit you, it was like a bomb hit you, like a ton of bricks. He just trained. To this day, I have never seen anybody train harder than Jeff Smith.
Amen. What a great guy. How about Michael Cole?
And, of course, I have to mention, you know, he was the first and only full-contact fighter who fought on the card of Thriller in Manila, Joe Louis, with Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier. Yep.
Yeah.
You know, in the closed circuit TV, I think over what was like 30 million people they were watching. It was the first time ever.
Yeah, I mean, they went 9 rounds. Yeah.
No, I think it was 12 rounds.
Was it 12 rounds? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me about Michael Coles.
Michael Coles had one of the fastest spinning reverse sidekicks that I've ever seen. And he was fast. Again, he worked just as hard like Jeff Smith. When I came up, I think he had just gotten his black belt. So he was considered like a rookie, but, man, he fought like a veteran.
I'm going to go back a little bit. Wayne Van Buren.
Wayne Van Buren. He had one of the wicked crescent kick, axe kick, front leg skipping, wicked. And, of course, he always had a perfect throw. His hair was always perfect, like Mr. Clean. So, again, all those were the people that actually, in a way, I looked up to, you know, Jimmy Stable, because when I was coming up, all those were black belts.
I'm going to get you with another friend of mine who runs NASCA now, Mr. Larry Carnahan.
Larry Carnahan, you know, I actually had a privilege to actually work with him when I was a brown belt as an assistant instructor in Washington, D.C. I think I was like 14 years old. That's when Mr. Larry Carnahan had just moved up from Texas, and he became a head instructor at Washington, D.C. school. So not only I had a privilege of meeting him, work under him, work with him as an assistant, and I call it man's man to this day. He is one of my mentor, idol, and also he was one of my instructors at the time.
Now, you have a tournament coming up, John. When is that?
My tournament is always on a Martin Luther King weekend. It's on Sunday. Saturday, we usually do a banquet or set up, depending on. This year, I'm doing a banquet to honor all the instructors and mentors. It's January 14th is a Saturday, is a banquet, and Sunday is a tournament, and Martin Luther King Monday is a holiday, so everybody can come. And we welcome all the beginners especially because it's a great, safe environment. And it's like kind of like a home away from home. So it's a great environment.
It's a great event. I remember coming years ago, and you treated me, I mean, I'm a nobody, buddy. I come from Hawaii, but you treated me like I was a VIP. I never forgot that.
I want you to know, Gary, I'm glad you had that experience because it doesn't matter whether you're a white belt or a black belt or you are a master or a grandmaster or a beginner. When you come to my tournament, my goal is to treat everybody like a VIP because I want them to have a great experience at these tournaments because tournaments, by competing, it gives you that indomitable spirit. It teaches you that maturity. It teaches you that confidence, public speaking. And that's what I benefited from competing. So I push tournaments because it definitely makes you push yourself to that next level. And yeah. It is going to be at Hilton, Washington Dulles Airport. It's a beautiful hotel, so come check it out. Food is good there, too.
Well, thank you, sir. Now, you know, I talked to Roy Kervin today, and he wanted to make sure that you're...
Hey, Master Roy Kervin, okay? Fort Worth Pro-Am. Yes, I was there.
Well, he wanted me to make sure that you understood that you're always invited to Kata Wars. You know, he invented that with Tadashi Yamashita 6 years ago. You have to have 100 first places just to be invited. So it's not just... It's an invitational Bobo event, and we'd love for you to come and be a judge and showcase everything. But anyway, we'll talk about that.
You know what?
But anyway, I want to wish you a very...
I was just going to say, Gary, that I am too old to compete now. Next year, I'll be 65. Can you imagine? I'll be 65, man. But I will
Would you just be a presence there, sign autographs?
Yes, sir.
Be just
yes,
my
sir.
Friend John.
I will definitely keep that in mind. And, you know, thank you for the invitation. And when's the date on that again? Is October?
It'll be October 7th.
October
7th.
7th. See, at least I got the month right. October 7th. There you go. Everybody be there.
There you go. But listen, John, Merry Christmas to you and your family, the Helen and everybody, and all the people of the Chung family, Howard, everybody, all the guys, you know, Yuguri, everybody. All of my old friends that I met through you and through Mr. Mastery. Merry Christmas, sir. And we wish
Merry
you
Christmas
a very happy
and God
holiday.
Bless.
No, God bless you, sir. Now,
God bless you.
Thank you,
Gary.
Thank you, John. Now, you know, this is our next to last show. Next week, we have the amazing Alan Goldberg. It's going to be a good one. And people don't realize that Alan and I go back almost 40 years. But it's going to be a fun show to end the year out. And we want to wish everybody on the crew, of the staff, of the Parts Unknown show, you know, everybody from the producer down, a very, very Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. And we say this every week. And we meet it from the heart. Mahalo. Aloha.
Merry Christmas.
Good night, Bobby. Merry Christmas.
Good night.
Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays. Be safe. God bless.
Good to meet you, John.